Okay, guys, another
edition. Hi, hello.
Only 2 days after the last one, we record another one because what is it?
DockerCon.
It's DockerCon. And I hope my audio is not too bad because I'm in the cubicle of my hotel room, which is a little bit like a youth hostel. But yeah, that's how it is. And it's very has sharp edges, so hopefully that sound is not too bad. But anyway, yeah.
I guess it will work.
I guess so too. Yeah, DockerCon. So, I'm in Copenhagen, and it's amazing.
Yeah, how's the weather? Have you been to Christiania?
No, I don't have time. I have to like walk the floor and do duty here and do this and talk to customers and talk to people. And
nice.
I'm busy. But it's very cool. Yeah. It's I think 2,500 attendees.
It was quite a big audience this morning when I saw the video.
Yeah, that it was.
It's really quite huge.
Yeah, and the Austin one was, I think, 4,500. So it's a little bit smaller, obviously. But yeah, it's Europe, right, after all. And it's a little bit... I think it's even late in the season, I wonder. I mean, end of October. Yeah, it's quite late, but I mean... With the US DockerCon in spring, then it makes sense to make it like half a year.
Just seeing your fellow colleagues on stage and how they rehearsed what they are presenting was interesting to see. It's a very, very the other part of the Atlantic Ocean. But anyhow, I think it's what's quite good. And I thought there's really some time going into these slick technical presentation.
Yeah, for sure. And so let's jump right in with the biggest bullet point here. I mean, I couldn't talk to you about it for like until today, right? But yeah, Kubernetes is now integrated into Docker, and that's pretty huge. Normally, you have on top of the Docker ecosystem, you had Swarm as an orchestrator, right? And a lot of customers obviously struggled with using Swarm. They wanted the operations guys maybe wanted to use Kubernetes, and what Docker did, what we did now, is put Kubernetes next to Swarm as an orchestrator to choose, and then you can use either Swarm or Kubernetes and alongside even, so you can have the cake and eat it, basically, right? That's pretty cool. And
a couple of questions arise from this. So first of all, I saw the demonstration was basically on the Docker for Mac thing, mm-hmm. and it will now ship basically with a mini Kubernetes installation that will be locally running, I guess, in a VM similar to the Swarm. But how is it? So how would that actually, how do you tell Docker Compose if you run or if you do Docker Stack Deploy? How do you say that your Docker command actually targets Kubernetes and not the Swarm? I wonder, how is that now a configuration thingy of the Docker command, or do you know anything about that already?
Yeah, I know a bit, but not the whole picture, I think. But as you saw in the keynote, he just used Docker Stack Deploy.
Yeah.
And then it was deployed as a Kubernetes pod.
Service.
So it was under the hood, it was automatically moved to Kubernetes. So it seems that everything will be Kubernetes underneath if you're not specially flag it as a Swarm service. That would be my understanding. So if you activate Kubernetes for your Docker engine, I assume that you have a configuration where you can say, okay, I want to have a Kubernetes cluster installed or initiated from the start, then your Docker engine will come up and you will have Swarm and Kubernetes. But
so you wouldn't even install, like, say you have your provisioning system and your operations, they will basically, I mean, what they currently do is hard provision a host as the kubelet, and then the kubelet will put Docker engine on it. And that, I mean, that's quite what I got so far from the Kubernetes ecosystem.
Yeah, no, the kubelet is just the control point for the node, right? So you have a Docker engine, and then you run a kubelet next to it, or you can run it in a container on top of it. And this kubelet will communicate with the... with Docker containerd engine, and then it will instantiate. But I mean, thinking about it, I'm not quite sure. So maybe we postpone the details.
Yeah, it's kind of like we should figure out in a later podcast if this is now everything upside down or how the integration. I mean, the question is basically that to the people I talk during the day, it's a little bit of a magic and kind of like the keynote says it's all possible. Well, that's supposed to be on the keynote. Everything is now great, but like the internal workings, it's quite interesting.
As far as I understood, what happened now, and how. Oh, sorry. I just wanted to interrupt you a bit. No, I think what I understood, and I think that's quite I'm pretty certain that it's like that. That you run the Docker engine, and then there is Swarm, and on top of Swarm, you have the services running. They are not shown as services. If you do Docker service, that's on your host, but the Kubernetes stuff runs on top of Swarm, actually, so that you can leverage secrets and all this jazz. You can this is leveraged by
interesting
by your stack deployment then. I have the beta obviously installed on my laptop here, and it's a beta from last week, beginning of last week, so I think it's not the version that they showed. But you install it as Docker for Mac, and then it comes up with Kubernetes already running. So I'm not sure what the end when the beta is out and you can fetch it and download it, what the final state of the beta will be. I think I saw somewhere that you have then in your preferences of the Docker engine. You have the checkbox.
You check that.
Yeah, right. You say, okay, and I want Kubernetes, and then it installs or initiates the Kubernetes daemons in containers.
Anyhow, I think that like the first of all, they save the developer convenience. You have basically when production runs on Kubernetes, you can have that also in your thing. I wonder if it's actually be possible to have then, like we did it currently as teammates, sometimes our workloads are a little bit too heavy, so we take our workstation boxes and make them instantaneous. We make them a Docker Swarm, and then we share the resources because our workstations are much more powerful than our laptops. And if that would be a thing, I think that's great. The other part that I think is really, really great is that your tooling stays the same. Basically, it doesn't matter anymore. You just do Docker stack deploy, and it's. I think that's really, really valuable. It's just unfortunate that there will be some conflicts going on because, as fundamentalists are in the technology scene, they say the Kubernetes control command line interface, it's much better, and then no Docker is much better, and then there will be, I think, team. What Docker basically did is brought fight onto the teams and organizations.
Yeah, but as you saw on the keynote, the Kubernetes ecosystem and the Kubernetes participants and the contributors, like Microsoft was on stage, Google guy was on stage, Solomon was on stage, and they all like locked the hands and danced together, right? I mean, the ecosystem seems to be so huge, and the market seems to be so huge that no one really cares who is getting pie, because there's so much for everyone. I can
totally see that. All I'm saying, all my feelings was basically people love their ivory towers, people love their unicorn, we are very special in any corner of the technology stack, and then it's just for some teams it might be hard to adopt, and also the pace, it's quite amazing, and to stay on top of things, I think big organizations just may take a year actually to go and have something in production like Kubernetes, or Swarm should be faster, but like Kubernetes is fairly complicated to bootstrap on bare metal, and if you're not doing
Docker Enterprise Edition. Dum, dum.
Yeah, but then you have commercial to pay, and you need to have the buck aside for doing so. But Kubernetes is made for running on clouds.
I think 80% sure that it's not tied to the Docker Enterprise Edition to run Kubernetes, right? You can
no,
run
no 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 no,
run,
no, no. It's can, just that
we will ship it with, as far as I understood, we will ship it with the community edition as well. So you download the community edition on your server fleet, and then you can run Kubernetes as well. What you don't get is all the goodies that the Enterprise edition gets, right? Like role-based access control and such. So
yeah, and I think also here again, it comes down to every security expert is the god of hellfire in every organization, and there is nothing he trusts, so he is. always charismatically doubt every solution out there, and yeah. And it will for certain. All I'm saying is that the movement is quite fast, and it's cool. And I, from a development perspective, I think it's a cool thing to be able to do this as a developer and have everything around. It's just that for organization, it's kind of like what we just tried that effort, and then what now?
Yeah.
it's hard for companies to stay on top of this, and
true.
And I think a little bit is purpose, because in the end, everybody says, well, you know what, just use Azure or just use EC2.
Yeah.
It's basically because you cannot, the price tag is just too high to come up and have somebody like create your bare metal cloud. And
I wonder what is the discussions are going to be like, and maybe we will talk about this in the upcoming weeks as well, but and hopefully I will get this from our customers as well, because if it's so easy to install it on your laptop, and developers, obviously they are going to use, I think they will use Docker for Mac or continue using Docker for Mac, and then it's just one click away to run Kubernetes on your laptop, and you can even run it with the Docker Compose file, and it will just work. And then this ease of use, I wonder how the other side of the DevOps tool chain will argue with this. I mean, how can you say, yeah, no, it works on your laptop fine, and
no, it works. It works
fine.
I think I said that offline to you. I feel very much like a Lisp moment at the current time. It's this. There is this perfect syntax, and there is this perfect way of doing something. And then suddenly you see all your mates around saying, you know what, if we use C, we can trigger ourselves to believe everything is really, really fast and close to the metal. And these are myths that just arise. And I think time will tell us, but I feel that people are just, it's way easier to be skeptic about something and not try it and prevent themselves from even trying it, and then have a mindset that is just not working then, and it is contra innovation. I feel it's a very lispy moment at the moment, because I don't like the whole security stuff. Like, okay, we put this, like, this is always what I wanted. It's basically, yeah, I have my application, maybe I have some issues, I don't know. I deploy it to dev, and then, yeah, cool. And it checks and it scans everything. So I'm using an outdated JDK, and it has bugs, and it shows me, oh, it has bugs. So I update it, and then the scan resolves and comes back with no bugs. And then I get sign off from production or from SRE operators, and they will, like, my container is now trusted, at least through a different source. And then we share responsibilities, and everything is like a slick workflow. I was really impressed today. But
time will tell, as you said. But
and the question was also about the pricing model. I don't know if you can talk about this today, but maybe if there is a transparent way to figure out. I remember that we had a conversation also very offline-ish in the US at the beginning of the year, where we kind of were two like sockets on a motherboard. So if you had a server with two sockets.
Yeah,
it would be different or something.
Yeah, no, the Docker engine, the Enterprise edition, costs per host. And when we talked back then, Docker only said that you cannot run like infinite amount of cores per box. So because obviously customers, they want to like sheet a little bit. So they buy a box with eight sockets. Then you have 100 cores, and you only have one engine. So that's not meant to be like that. So, but if you have two cores, two sockets, so a normal server, let's say a commodity server, then it's fine. But if you have like a beefy 150 socket system, then I think we feel a little bit cheated on. So that was the thing. But and I'm not sure about the prize actually. I think it's somehow like, but don't quote me on this. So I'm talking about it on a podcast. But it's like
maybe don't say it. Even I guess there is a site on the Docker page. A
couple of hundreds or thousand per year per server, something like that. So it's, but yeah, as I said, I'm not entirely sure. But pricing.
Yeah,
let me see.
I think it's kind of like if organizations adopt. I mean, they spent money already. I don't know what even an email system on like what companies pay for.
I have Outlook or Google
Mail in enterprises.
Yeah, Docker Enterprise Edition for Linux. If you have the business day support contract, it costs $750. And so
per day, per what? Per box per year.
Per box, so Enterprise Edition basic per node per year, yeah. But this is the basic support model. So with this,
if you do everything right, you're not calling. I would be perfectly fine not having any support, but still have the secured registry and everything, and have the security around the role model of like who is signing off what and everything.
But yeah, what I just said would be like the Enterprise Edition, the daemon, the engine, and if you want to have the UCP, so this web GUI,
the data center,
then it costs like $1,500. If you want to have the business day support model or business critical, which gives you like better SLA, so the response time will be faster, then it's $3,000. So it's $750, $1,500, $3,000, and then you have advanced, which is slightly more. But like I said, like 1,000, 2,000, something like that. So it's in this ballpark. And
it's still interesting because I don't know if a huge Dell box today with I don't know 32 cores and one socket, and we are talking somewhere between 10 and 20, depending on the memory and the SSDs or not SSDs. So that would be basically, roughly speaking, almost 10 years, right?
Yeah, if but think 20, about 20, this, I mean, you buy a box like this from Dell or whatever vendor, and it will cost you like 10, 15,000 if you have like a beefy box with two sockets and maybe 32 or 48 cores.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and it's a bit
like,
of...
You add 1,000, and it's mostly buy a board for 3 years, right? So your buying model is 3 years normally, I think, or maybe four, or maybe two, something like that. So you add an additional €4,000 for the Docker engine as a license fee, and then I think it's like 10%.
No, I think it's like sometimes I'm surprised how expensive cloud hosted services are. When I looked at Elasticsearch hosted services, I thought, "Boah, holy moly, that's quite expensive." But now seeing hardware purchases for real, it's kind of like, "Oh, okay, that's also a quite valid price tag." So yeah, it really depends how much money you want to spend, and do you want to spend it up front or you want to have the flexibility. Yeah. But it's kind of a Milchmädchenrechnung again, because you would go to Azure and have your host, or to EC2 and have the host, and that costs you. And then on top of that, you would spend money for orchestration and security.
Yeah, but I guess, I think that you can have a hosted Docker Enterprise Edition or Docker Data Center, which will not cost you as much as if you would purchase the license yourself, right? Because obviously, if someone says, "Yeah, I have a cloud service, I want to host Docker Data Center for customers, multi-tenancy, yada yada," then he might get a little discount on the licenses, and this discount he can then put forward for his customers, right? But yeah, that just an initial deal. But
yeah, you should have this dynamic pricing model where if the Green Party from Germany wants something like it, it is very cheap, and if the AfD wants something like it, it's very expensive.
Yeah, First Amendment in the US. I think people are just writing hate mails to to you now.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, but cool. I mean that, and it has to be said again that this is a vanilla Kubernetes. It's no wrapper, no special flavor of Kubernetes. It will be the vanilla upstream Kubernetes and the latest version, and it will be updated in each iteration of the Docker engine. And so it's going to be, I think, a very cool for some, at least for some, it will be a very cool experience, because you just install the Docker engine, which you know is very simple, and then you get Kubernetes for free, actually. And I think
we should make some experiments, like actually trying to deploy one of our presentation stacks and see one versus the other and how we do the networking. I'm very curious, like how translate. I think the compose file is not giving you everything that Kubernetes would allow you, but yeah. I'm on the stance that I think you don't need anything else, and if you need something, you are asking for trouble. But that's my small horizon as a developer.
Yeah, this is the initial Docker Compose integration, right? I already saw some additional options that will be introduced that you can tell the autoscaler to do such things.
Interesting.
So it's going to be more and more integrated into Docker Compose as well. And then
also a thing you should figure out is, what about the healthiness and the readiness check and the distinction between those two?
Yeah, this is always, I mean, what was the cool stuff about Kubernetes is one, what you just talked about, like the readiness check and the liveliness check. So when you use plain proper Docker, you only have one health check, and the health check cannot really determine figure out if it's his fault, if the Docker container is broken because his code crashed or stuck, or if the dependencies are not up yet, for instance. So, and this is kind of a subtle problem, because let's say you have a front end and a back end, a database, and the database is down. If your health check checks for the availability of some like query or something, and then the front end doesn't work because the back end is down, then you don't want to tear down the front end and rebuild it again, because this won't help, right? So you should have a distinction between, is this my fault or am I dead, basically. And this is what this readiness check and liveliness check is. It's like two different checks for two different states. So, and this this is in Kubernetes pretty nicely. And also what Kubernetes does is this concept of pods, right? And that you can have multiple containers that share certain namespaces and are an atomic entity for scaling a certain service. So maybe you have like a logging daemon running in one container, sharing all namespaces with the application itself, and then you have maybe another container that is somehow a backup job, for instance, so that you can say, and I think that was in the demo today as well, right, that you have a Kubernetes job instead of a Kubernetes service, and this Kubernetes job will just fire once and then it will be done, so it's like batch job. And this feature is also pretty cool. Like, let's say, think of like you have a 24 hour, you every 24 hours you want to make a backup, and then you just fire up this job. And this seems to be, it's pretty cool. It's going to be pretty cool. And also, what I really like is that, and I think that this argument with operations should be pretty straightforward, because the Docker Compose as a Docker CLI and the Kube CLI, so everything works with each other, right? So if you don't like the Docker command line interface, then you don't need to use it. You just use the Kube ecosystem and plug it into the Docker the Docker engine's Kube, and then you're good. So if you hate Docker, then don't use it. Don't use the command line interface.
You can
just use all the goodies from the Docker from the Kubernetes ecosystem and just.
But you know that. Talking is cheap and experimenting is expensive, and real experience comes only from experimenting. It's just very expensive how to do. Your brain hurts, it grows new structures that you just learned, and you need a lot of liquor to get rid of it. So
that's true.
That could be something, the way you get SREs on board.
Liquor?
They can drink more to destroy their knowledge. I'm
good
a little
that
bit too
not
mean.
Talking about this like on a public thing, like a podcast, for instance.
No, I'm holding myself back now here. Sorry.
Yeah, but exciting, that's for sure. And I hope that I can get my hands on the demo images so that I can do this on my laptop as well, and then I can showcase it at the Docker Meetup on Thursday, which will be in Berlin. And if if I have something, then yeah, we can also, I mean, I can show it you to you when you swing by or whatever.
Yeah, we should definitely have a workshop, and I try to fetch a lot of opinions and misconceptions maybe, and then we can straighten them out.
Yeah, cool. So I said, I mean, we obviously,
yeah,
I
you have to go. I see
lot.
There are parties and it's Copenhagen and yeah, and then yeah, just leave me alone, man.
I mean, okay, so Kubernetes, cool, upcoming, excited. I have noted some other points for the DockerCon in general. One of which I'm always excited about when I see it, and I think I should play around with it much more, is LinuxKit. I saw a presentation today again about LinuxKit. So LinuxKit, if you don't know, or people listening, the two guys don't know about it, it's basically a stripped down container OS, in a sense of that's not the one that's running inside of the container, but the operating system on top of which you deploy your container engine and your swarm cluster. So this is like CoreOS, for instance, is a stripped down operating system to run Kubernetes, right? And Atomic, for instance, from Red Hat as well, that's stripped down. And Docker with the Mobi project created a way of, it's pretty much with a YAML file, describe a distribution, like a little Linux system with only the services that you need to run whatever you want to run. And that's pretty cool because everything is a container. Yeah, that's pretty cool to see. And it's maturing more and more, and I'm really keen of trying it out. And also,
so you would actually create a Linux distribution, and then you would say your provisioning system would put this operating system on all of your boxes, and from there you actually run then container D.
Yeah, exactly. So it's you describe, I want this latest kernel, and Docker supports the kernel, and it will always be the latest, so the latest stable and the latest, I think the latest master as well. So I think 4.1.3 is currently the one, or 4.9. So it's pretty fast updated within this Mobi project, because if you have a kernel bug, then you don't want to wait until some Linux distribution backports it to run it, right? So
yeah, but sometimes you just have to wait 4 years until you can update this service. It's just like what it is. It's
yeah, but this is awesome. The other thing that, and I already mentioned it, that Microsoft, Google, and Docker work together. I'm from a more conservative, competitive German or European market segment where everyone envies the other guys, and it's kind of interesting to see that they are like collaborating like crazy, and no one is like locking himself in a closet and saying, "Nah, he stole my user there, and then he got an Apple, and I want an Apple as well." So it's very cool to see that they are so open and collaborating.
Yeah, but you are also. I think this is a cool argument, and I think it's part of the we work together culture, and I think lots of it is really, really positive to see. And we were actually this morning quite surprised how Microsoft steps in and makes so much more possible and contributing. And it's really good to see.
Yeah.
But.
now I'm a but.
Yeah. Conspiracy theorists would say it's now only one, right? You can, like, it's just the American IT giants that will cut down their biggest slice of the pie of infrastructures, and everything else would, I mean, there's only one Chinese company I can think of, and then yeah, since Germany is busy reinventing the diesel engine, we will never get into the future. It's a little bit sad, but that's definitely not the fault of Microsoft or Google. No. I mean, that's just what people could argue.
Yeah,
but I think it's really nice to see.
Yeah, and that's true. I mean, it's still a capitalist system, right? The system we are living on. And obviously, I mean, Microsoft sees that it needs to not concentrate on the operating system level anymore, but go back to the roots or whatever you call it, so that you... Or no, not back to the roots, but get big in the cloud business. And by contributing and collaborating with Docker, they make sure that a lot of people, they hope, go to Azure instead of to AWS, right? So you have to grow your cloud pie, and you cannot just wait until AWS goes bankrupt, so you have to do something. And I think this one effort to make Azure maybe the go-to cloud for Docker containers, like AWS is a go-to cloud maybe for virtual machine images, like this AMIs. And yeah. I guess they just want to be the one that's next
to
Docker.
They actually don't call it AMIs. It, I learned the other day, it's called EMI.
EMI.
For some reason, okay. The support hotline always says, "What's about your Emmy?" Okay.
Interesting. Yeah, and also pretty nice, but I'm a little bit beefed and amazed, and yeah, it's a community engagement that DockerCon provides. I talked about it yesterday or Sunday that I'm a Docker pal, right? So. Docker Pearl means you mentor newcomers to the conference, and I have three or four, and all three of them are kind of like 40, 50, 60, something like that, or I think over 50.
And yeah, ask him about Scheme, Racket, and Lisp. Probably they tell you nice stories. Yeah. And can learn something.
And when we met yesterday, the first time with the guys, and I asked them, okay, why are you at DockerCon, and what is your intention? And then all of three of them said, yeah, we're currently evaluating Linux containers, and we want to figure out if we should use Swarm or Kubernetes or Mesos. And I was like, I cannot talk about it. Let's talk about it tomorrow after the general session. Because this for them is obviously like a blast, right? Because now they don't have to install Kubernetes and they just run Docker. And once they figure out that they have a need for the special things that you can do with Kubernetes over Swarm, then you could just use it, but you don't have to. I mean, the learning curve is pretty, it's so flat because you can just start with Docker files and then you do Docker run and then you do Docker compose when you get bored of having multiple Docker run commands in a bash file. Then you use Docker compose, and when you want to scale it across multiple machines, then you use Docker Swarm, and when you want to autoscale and do this all this kube magic, then you just switch to kube. And everything will be or is supposed to be seamless, and yeah, it's maybe the developer even doesn't care about what orchestrator is used, because locally you will just use the Docker engine as it is for his testing and then let the operations decide what they want to do. I mean, that's I guess the most, or the hopefully the path that people go down, right? That it's
there is a lot of hope involved actually for people for people to accept there is a smart innovation in front of them, and it's worth to maybe contribute upstream, but not try to fix something with something else that is just It was in the talk the other day when we had the last podcast. It's like, how come that everybody who is in IT has the feeling when he contacts a new technology, he needs to fix something about it? Like, it's always the first step. It's not like accepting a solution. First, you bang your head against it and think what you need to fix. You wrap it or you do, like, it's so, yeah.
But isn't it? I mean, I'm not sure if I understand it, but I can understand, I can emphasize or be empathetic a little bit, because I think you want to make it your own, and then for some it's hard to accept that it's not done by the organization, or it's done by even yourself. So you want to make it your own, and in order to make it your own, you have to like pee against the lamp pole like a dog. You have to pee it, so you have to give it some flavor of yours, and then you can say, yeah, okay, that's I understand it, and it's mine. And if you only embrace what's thrown at you, then maybe you think that you are like disposable or that you are interchangeable. So you have to add some complexity. Like,
that's again back to the, like, there are just two things in my life. I had probably more, but this is the main reoccurring pattern that we have. At one point in a discussion, it all goes back to, have you been loved in your life? And the other part is pointers. But
now you get out the big guns.
Yeah, no, I'm stopping it. We should find an end here, because I'm hungry. It's late in Germany.
Okay. Yeah, then just one last point. I mean, you know that I like to talk with and over HPC and with HPC guys, and I met a couple of them here even. That's cool.
Interesting.
And they all, we all agreed over beer, but also when we were sober, that we should do something.
You made them drunk, and then everybody agreed with you.
No, but they before even, they were like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I was so pumped. I mean, I talked with one guy from CERN, I think, for an hour, and with one guy from Cambridge over an hour as well. And we were like, yeah, 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 here, do you see the rainbow? Yeah, I can see the rainbow. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's coming, it's coming. So, yeah, that's pretty cool. I like that engagement. Alrighty, so tomorrow is another general session, and I'm not pretty sure what's in there, but I hope that there's something cool, and I have some ideas what it might be, but I don't know, so we have to see. And then, yeah, there is more conference. I will hosting a little community theater thingy. And then, before you know it, tomorrow evening I'm back in Berlin.
Berlin. Yeah, it's quite warm here, actually, so...
Yeah, here in Copenhagen it's nice. Quite cold, actually. It's not that warm. But
well, we had 20 degrees today.
Okay. Well, that's lucky for you. Yeah. Lucky you. Yep. Alrighty. So, cool. I'm not sure how fast I can push this out. I mean, it would be stupid to wait until like Sunday, right? So maybe I should even...
Yeah, no. So maybe you can make it tomorrow morning or at least tomorrow night.
Yeah, tomorrow morning should be fine. Maybe or maybe at now, but I think now it's a little bit late. I have to go
out
to
of the
party.
Hotel, maybe
party.
Not.
Okay.
Party, party.
Alrighty.
Enjoy.
So, see you guys, or talk to you, Hagen, and thanks for listening, the two of the things. And yeah. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.